Well, if you are anything like me, you are not ready for Christmas. I mean, from a buying standpoint, I have not finished my shopping. You know, I'm really curious about how people celebrate Christmas and do the gift opening thing. In my family, nobody got to open or see anything until Christmas morning, because Santa Claus was real to me until I was about 37. That's not true, but it's, you know, he's still real to me in a spiritual kind of a way. But I don't know how you feel about it, when Christmas presents should be opened. When I got hooked up with this woman of mine, she tried to rattle my cage a little bit and decided to show me the way the Nelson family did it in Lenoir City, Tennessee. They opened gifts the night before Christmas. So on Christmas Eve, everybody gathers together and eats. I like that part, the eating part. And then they open gifts, and all the kids and everything go through, get everything from everybody else. And then Santa shows up in the morning. Do y'all do it that way? I wish I could see a raising of hands. I'd say it would be pretty evenly split. I wonder if it's a like a north or a south kind of a traditional thing, or if it's something that I guess you could look up a survey. I'd say people, there's probably surveys out there. I'm not going to bother to do that right now. But, you know, how people celebrate. Now, you know, in the morning when we open up all the gifts and stuff, and then it's time to eat, and then that's the best part of Christmas, isn't it? Eating? I think it is. Tara and I went to honey baked ham place in Johnson City the other day, and I went in there and dropped 94 big ones, not big ones, 94 little ones for a half of a ham. But, man, that's something this old boy can tear into, the sweetness. Just loving ham anyway. Wrong thing for a 65-year-old on anti-cholesterol medicine. Probably the wrong thing for me to be eating. You know, I really hope that atorvastatin that I take is going to do the job for me, because I'm going to break all the eating rules here in the next few days. We have decided as a family we're going on a diet. Really a kind of a lifestyle change, the way we're going to eat in the new year. It's kind of one of our New Year's resolutions. Do you make those? You know, I think it's good to set goals. I've always made New Year's resolutions. Most of them have to do with business, but sometimes they have to do with mi familia. And just there's things that I figured out over time that had maybe deteriorated in terms of time spent with certain people, and I needed to fix that. And so, I mean, there's other areas. Need to keep my closet cleaned up. You know, just minor stuff. Maybe not so minor to my wife, but minor to me. But if it's major to her, it's major to me. So anyway, one of the things I had my son-in-law on the show with me yesterday, and he didn't blow it too badly, I don't think. Do you? But we were talking about, well, what we're going to talk about today, and that's some interesting innovations that came around in 2021 as far as the auto industry is concerned. There certainly were a lot of challenges, and there will continue to be, as there are shortages brought on by a number of reasons. Because the supply chains are so massive when it comes to building an automobile, there's plenty of room for disruption. You know, you can have one component that one supplier makes, and it can shut down an assembly line because it is a critical part of building this car. And if you can't have it, then, you know, go home. That's the plan. So what we have to do is work together with suppliers and dealers and everybody from one end of the chain to the other to make sure that things run a little bit smoother in 2022 than they did in 2021. Right now we have some pretty severe shortages, and we're not the only ones in this dilemma. but we are selling cars, having a phenomenal Nissan month. We were able to get enough Nissan product in to supply the needs of our buyers. Ford was a little short, but like I say, we have a whole lot of sold orders, and we're just keeping our fingers crossed that the chip shortage and all the other shortages, labor now is probably going to be an issue if they close because of Omicron. Don't you love people to hear these people on the news call it Omicron? They didn't learn their Greek alphabet like I did. Well, some people call it Omicron instead of Omicron. I'm sticking with Oma. Matter of fact, my great aunt's name was Oma. Now, that's a bizarre group of names in that family. I don't know how, pardon me for, taking another tangent, but my grandmother's name was Orza. Now, this was my dad's mom. Her name was Orza. She had a sister named Aura and another sister named Oma. That's where Omicron came from. And then the family decided, there was an Orla also. And then the family decided, okay, let's get off this O kick. And the fifth child was Glenva. So anyway, that's the weird name situation in my family. I bet you guys have some weird names in your family too. But, God love them. I mean, that's just the traditions. And go back into that family tree and you'll see some pretty strange labels on some folks. But we'll take our first break, and we'll be back here in just a minute. Okay, we're back, or I'm back. Back in, the late 60s, and early 70s, there was a huge transition due to the shortages of fuel, gasoline. OPEC decided to put the brakes on oil production and create a bunch of gas shortages, and the domestic automakers weren't prepared for that. Toyota, Honda, Datsun at the time, and Volkswagen, they had been building small cars and gotten really good at it and figured out a way to make money doing it. And the Chevrolet and Ford and Chrysler, they had to catch up. They did so with cars like Vega, Pinto, Chevette. Remember the Chevette? The Chevette wasn't wide enough for my shoulders. We sold a lot of them, though. One time we were at the Chevy store in Greenville. We were at our old dealership, our original store, and we had if you worked really hard, you can get 8 big full-size cars in the showroom. We got 32 Chevettes in that showroom. We packed them in so tightly that you had to climb out of the windows to get out of the car. The doors would not open. Why did we do that? Because we just thought it was a interesting thing to do. We had a bunch of Chevettes in stock, and we thought that was a very interesting thing to do on a very dead day. So that's the kind of stuff that car dealers do when there's no customers on the lot. My dad wasn't real happy about it, though. He walked in and couldn't walk in, or tried to walk in the door. He said, "What the heck is going on?" And our sales manager at the time said, "We just want to see how many Chevettes we could get in here. Get them out." So anyway, that didn't work too good. Let's talk about innovation, though. The reason I was talking about the 70s, and so much of the innovation was to correct what was coming out of the emission pipes back then, and it had a very negative effect on horsepower and fuel economy of most vehicles. And so, what cured that was the advent of fuel injection. Now, fuel injection was not new. I was watching a Jay Leno's Garage the other day, and he was talking about Mercedes-Benz Gullwing that was built in 1952, and it had mechanical fuel injection. So that's where, the fuel, instead of going through a carburetor that sits on top of the engine and then goes through an intake manifold, which is just a passageway, and eventually makes its way, it's mixed with air, and gets into the top of the cylinder where it's compressed, and a spark plug goes off, and voila, you've got downforce, you've got power. Well, fuel injection actually was much more efficient in that it would put the right amount of fuel at the right time instead of going through that long trail through the intake manifold, it would be injected directly into the cylinder. And you get a much more precise burn of fuel, more power. And so, you know, that was the innovation that really didn't make its way into the common vehicles until the early 80s. And then it wasn't direct injection where it's going directly into the cylinder. It was something called throttle body injection, which is kind of like a carburetor. It sat on top of the engine. It was just electronically controlled. But, you know, those kind of innovations combined with other technologies really got to the point where horsepower started climbing again. Fuel economy started getting better. And the domestic automakers started to catch up in terms of you know, as far as engine technology. They still weren't there as far as quality control, and longevity. You know, I think planned obsolescence. You ever heard that term? The other name for that term is we know this thing's going to fall apart, and we know about when. Well, that's kind of a long-winded way of saying it, but planned obsolescence, it kind of states that at 100,000 miles, this thing's going to quit operating the way it should. That's really not an issue anymore. Quality is a given, and just about everything out there is good. We'd still have recalls and things like that, but that's going to continue to happen in the future. But what about some of the other innovations that have happened in this particular year? Well, it's a pretty good year for that. They've come out with a new way to make steel, and apparently there's a lot of coking coal. It's called coking, C-O-K-I-N-G, coal. And it was used to make steel, and they figured out ways to not do that and create so much carbon dioxide that goes into the atmosphere. So hydrogen is now extracted from water via electrolysis and then used to remove the oxygen from the ore as opposed to using coking coal. So they're finding out ways to not only make cars lighter, but to make the steel that goes into cars in a less environmentally damaging way. Another thing that happened this year, General Motors is among the companies that are embracing a new factory tool that kind of reminds you of RoboCop. Remember RoboCop? I liked that movie when it first came out. But GM has actually been experimenting with exoskeletons. Now imagine a mechanical wearable that helps transfer upper body strain down to the hips of the wearer. Have you ever seen those things that they carry in refrigerators and washers and dryers in now where the guys strap it on their backs and basically it makes it so much easier to transport? It's amazing. Who would have ever thought of that? But it worked pretty good. I wonder if the Egyptians used those to build the pyramids. Probably not. Some of those rocks are pretty big. But this is basically you see these workers on the assembly lines this year that they started using these. And one worker said that prior to using an exoskeleton, he was often too tired to do work around the house at the end of the work week, just worn out. And he said now he has energy to do chores. So I'm sure his wife is happy about that. So that's a good innovation to help people who are building cars and doing repetitive work be able to get it done without doing as much body damage. Oh, here's something, you know, something as when it comes to paperwork, something in the finance office that makes things go a little bit quicker. Electronic signatures have finally made it to the auto industry. You know, for so long, none of the banks would accept an electronic signature unless they executed it in their bank. They did not want those coming from new car dealers. Now, I don't know if you understand the relationship, but new car dealers don't loan money. They loan money that is available through banks and credit unions. So, you know, a credit union, we may have a contract in the house for like Eastman Credit Union, and the customer can sign that contract here, and then we submit the contract to Eastman, and then they pay us for the car. Now we have the technology to do that electronically, which makes it a whole lot easier. Not only from a customer standpoint, they sign the paperwork. We can actually submit that contract now electronically to Ford Motor Credit, or you know, if you buy from a Toyota dealer, they can submit it overnight and get funded on those deals. And one of the things that does is that allows the customer to get their paperwork done quicker. In other words, be able to get your tags and all that other stuff. There's so many different delays that can happen in the process of when buying a car. And anything that we can do to shorten the cycle time on getting paid allows us to be able to turn around without completely running out of money and paying off other vehicles. You can imagine when if you have like a really big week and you sell, you know, 35, 50 cars somewhere in that neighborhood, that's a lot of money. We know when the average selling price of a car is, what is it, $42,000 now is the average price of a new vehicle. Isn't that amazing? And so if you sell a whole bunch of cars, then you can imagine how many millions can be out there. The dealership has to pay off the floor plan on the car, and they haven't been funded. They haven't received any money from the financial institution where you finance the car. Now, if you pay cash, you know, we have the money instantly. But, you know, that's why it requires a tremendous amount of capital in a car dealership to be able to manage that float. You know, it's just one of the things that, that if you don't have enough capital in your business, then it can lead to disastrous consequences. And we saw that happen at a dealership in Morristown. That they ran out of cash, and they didn't bother to tell anybody, and basically sold a bunch of cars and didn't pay them off. And also customers traded in cars that had payoffs on them, and they didn't pay them off either. And so imagine you're sitting at home, and your bank is wondering why you are delinquent on your old car loan, and you're also wondering, well, why did you never get a payment book from anybody to make payments on your new car? You know, alarm bells start going off. You know, I guess it is our fiduciary responsibility to pay off your vehicle, to, you know, pay off the one you're buying on the floor plan and then pay off your vehicle as well. But what if the dealer just doesn't? You know, if they run out of money, what happens? Well, customers can lose money. I guarantee you don't have insurance for that. Now, you can take the failed dealership to court and hopefully win. Think about the time involved. In the meantime, you're without a car, and your particular bank, maybe they've even sold your trade-in. Your loan is not paid off, so you've got no car. You've got a debt owed to the people that you've had the car financed with, and the bank that has the car floor plan that you bought wants it back. Isn't that a horrible scenario? It's happened a lot of times. So, you know, if you hear of a dealership that's in financial distress, you don't want to buy a car from them. You just got to be careful with that. All right, let's move on here. Folks, keys are going away. Pretty soon, Mercedes is coming out with a fingerprint. They've got it perfected, and this is one of their innovations. Fingerprint is all you need to start a Mercedes or open the door. Just touch the door frame with your finger on a particular pad, and the door unlocks. We've already seen keys being replaced by smartphones. Have you ever lost a key fob lately? It's expensive to get those, to buy them and also to get them reprogrammed. And so that's something that you do not want to lose if you do get a key fob. But we're going to be seeing no key fobs and just using electronic devices. I mean, it really doesn't make any sense. Everybody has a smartphone. And, I mean, there's no real reason for you to have two different electronic devices to be able to start or unlock your car. And so anyway, that's another innovation that's coming. Another thing that came this year was backseat detection. I don't know if you've heard of some people that accidentally leave their youngins in the backseat, but now every vehicle that we sell has backseat detection. So if there's somebody back there and you're getting out of the car and they're still sitting in the backseat, a dinger is going to go off in the vehicle and let you know that, hey, wait a minute, there's somebody in the backseat. I guess it's possible to forget, you know, somebody in the back seat. Some of you may want to forget who's in the back seat, but you know, that might just be your mother-in-law. I don't know. I probably shouldn't have said that. We'll be back in just a minute with this edition of My Car Guru. Okay, here's our last little innovation, compliments of Tesla. Yeah, they're going to eliminate a lot of the buttons and knobs and things like that on your vehicle. The steering wheel is no longer going to be round. It's going to be a U-shaped steering wheel. This new Corvette that I bought has a square steering wheel. It's, you know, it's kind of rounded on the edges, but it's still pretty much a square. I haven't figured out the advantage of that, but I know you see it a lot in race cars. But this U-shaped steering wheel will incorporate a lot of different force touch buttons that will activate turn signals, high beams, the horn, the autopilot, the windshield wipers, and voice commands. The biggest change is the elimination of the drive mode stalk, which would, you know, in our language would mean the gear shift, which controls park, reverse, neutral, and so forth. The automaker plans to rely on the technology that powers its autopilot driver assist system to shift gears. Now, I don't understand how this is going to work, but the car, get this, the car will guess which way you want to go. If the front of the vehicle is facing a garage wall, it will detect this and automatically shift the vehicle to reverse once the driver presses the brake pedal. And if it guesses wrong, well, the driver can override the command by using the vehicle's touch screen. I don't know, folks. Sometimes they press the envelope just a little bit too far. But, you know, we're all going to see it. We have no control over it. I guess the public decides whether they like something or don't like it, and that controls whether or not it continues to be in our cars. But I'll do my best to try to keep you informed of this stuff as it comes up. And we've got one more show, which will be on Friday. Christmas is the following day, and I won't be on Saturday anyway, but I will be here Monday morning and hopefully with some new shirts and socks. Mine are about worn out. Well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and we will see you tomorrow.